Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 10, The Opulence of the Absolute, text number 24. Prodasavantamokyamam Thiri partha brihashvatim Sinaninam aham skanda Sarasam asmi sargraha Parodasam, of all priests, cha, also, mukyam, the chief, mam, me, vidi, understand, partha, o sanaprita, brihaspatim, brihaspati, Sinaninam, of all commanders, aham, I am, skanda, kartikeya, sarasam, of all reservoirs of water, asmi, I am, sagara, the ocean. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Of all priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya. And of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Purport. Indra is the chief demigod of the heavenly planets, and is known as the king of the heavens. The planet on which he reigns is called Indraloka. Brihaspati is Indra's priest, and since Indra is the chief of all kings, Brihaspati is the chief of all priests. And as Indra is the chief of all kings, similarly Skanda, or Kartikeya, the son of Parvati, and Lord Shiva, is the chief of all military commanders. And of all bodies of water, the ocean is the greatest. These representations of Krishna only give hints of his greatness. Out of all these different items, we all have experience with the ocean. Because the ocean, if we go to the ocean and see how big it is, we might become a little impressed. Especially if we think that Krishna is aware of every atom of water in the ocean. Could you just imagine that? A vast ocean. And Krishna knows where every drop of water was, is right now, where it was in the past, and where it's going to be eternally into the future. Now that's quite a good memory. And what to speak of this saltwater ocean, it is a fraction of the milk ocean, which is a fraction of the sugarcane ocean, which is a fraction of the liquor ocean, which is a fraction of the curd ocean, etc., etc. Anyhow, it's really beyond our range to comprehend these things. But the whole idea is to inspire us with some awe and reverence for Krishna. Especially when we consider that Krishna is personally here as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva, and that although he looks like an ordinary Sankirtan devotee, he knows he's the source of all the oceans, at least, plus everything else. So that awe and reverence is necessary for surrender. Because if you knew, someone knew, for instance, if you're going to bet on a horse, which this is not a class about betting on horses, but if we were going to bet on a horse, then you'd probably want to go to the person who knew which horse was going to win. You weren't going to bet on, if you knew a person who knew, just like I gambled twice in my life when I was a college student. It's only because I had run out of money. And although I was working, the grocery store, they didn't like the fact that my hair was too long, so they fired me. So I needed some money during my summer as a college student. So my friends told me they knew which horse was going to win. So I said, I gave him $50. And the horse won. Because it was rigged. These are all rigged. And then the same horse, we put another $50 on later on that during the summer, and he won again. And that covered my summer expenses. So if you know the horse is going to win, it's not really a gamble. As it's usually rigged, these horse races. So simply, if you know that Krishna knows past, present, future, he knows every horse who's going to win, then you probably want to bet on him, whatever he tells you. So if he gives you something to do, it's a good bet that if you do it, it's going to turn out good. So that's the whole idea. If Krishna is so great, then we should probably surrender to him. Surrender to him means he says, bet on this horse, and we say, no worries. I'll even take a loan out if Krishna says to bet on that horse. Because the horse is going to win. Similarly, whatever we do for Krishna, because he's so great, it's certainly we're going to be the winner. Now, as far as Brihaspati, as explained here, Brihaspati is represented in astrology. Does anyone know besides Adipurushabhru which planet Brihaspati is represented as? What's that? Yes, I think you're married to an astrologer. Jupiter. So Jupiter is actually a planet we call Jupiter. And Jupiter is Brihaspati. As a matter of fact, every planet in our solar system is a representative of one of the incarnations. And which incarnation is Jupiter representative of? You know? Good guess. You're right. You hit the jackpot. And who's the representative of? Let's start with the sun, which is the incarnation for the sun. Take a guess. Which kshatriya is an incarnation? Yes, Lord Ramachandra. And the moon? Krishna. And then after that comes Mercury. Buddha. And Venus? Who said that? Yes, Parashurama. The goddess of love is Parashurama. Every time he chopped off someone's head, it was... It was very artistically done. Ah, sculpture. Love has two different sides to it. And we have Mars. Well, you know, because Nrisimhadev. Yes, Nrisimhadev. And of the demigods, who is Lord Nrisimhadev? Who's Mars? They also have their demigod incarnations. So who's the demigod incarnation for Mars? Skanda. He's the general amongst the demigods. As it mentions in this verse. And Rahu? Who's Rahu? Varaha. And Ketu? Korma, that's right. What's that? Matsya. And Ketu? What's that? Yeah. And what's that? And I guess we got all of them. So they all these planets actually were all incarnations of the Supreme Lord. We're all the powers and all the abilities that we get are actually derived from these planets, and their powers and abilities are derived from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the demigods. Each demigod is empowered in a certain way, and by association in a certain way with that demigod, then we get empowered also. Unless we're a resident Vrindavan or we're a pure devotee, then we're directly empowered by Yoga Maya. In any case, it's not so unbelievable. If one actually studies any of the Vedic sciences, whether it be Ayurveda or astrology, Jyotirveda or Vastu, then one can actually see the connection between the Supreme Lord's energies and even in our own limited realm of experience. Therefore, the Vedic knowledge is actually meant to give faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita in many places, Yomam evam sambudo janati purushottama sasarvavit bhajante mam sarababhema bharata. That anyone who knows me is the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is said to be the knower of everything. And therefore he engages himself in full devotional service. Iti guyatamam shastram idam yuktva mayanaga etam bhutva buddhimatsyat kritas chabarata. This is the most confidential knowledge of all the Vedic literature. Anyone who knows this will become wise and his endeavors will know perfection. So if we can actually become convinced that we have a connection with Krishna, even in our mundane world. Now, modern science is actually meant to disconnect us from Krishna. Technology, the modern medicine, the modern astronomy is all materialistic, impersonalist, atheistic, not so-called knowledge, which just connects us from any kind of relationship with the Supreme. All mechanistic, voidistic, impersonalistic sciences. There may be some scientists who somehow or another has some connection with God consciousness, like they have a branch of science called intelligent design. And in intelligent design, just like Darwin, he had this theory that cells were just a blob of matter. There is nothing intelligent about the design of a cell. And then they discovered the microscope. And they discovered there was a lot more going on than they thought was going on. And then they discovered by further investigation that there are trillions of cells in the body, and each cell in the body is more sophisticated, has a more intelligent arrangement than a city like New York. Because right now, New York's such a mess, it doesn't really require much to have a more intelligent arrangement than New York right now. In any case, previously New York used to have their sanitation department, they had their electricity department, they had their water department, they had so many, the fire department, the police department, so many different departments. And it was, these departments were there for trillions of cells in the body. And they were being created and destroyed within a very short period of time. Therefore, an intelligent design theory postulates that there must be an intelligent designer. Of course, they never say that. But the idea is if there's an intelligent design, there must be an intelligent designer. If you throw up a bunch of dust in the air and it lands, you don't probably expect it to land as a Picasso painting. Because maybe Picasso paintings are such that maybe it'll be better than a Picasso painting. But Michelangelo was a little bit better painter. You wouldn't expect, you throw up a bunch of paint in the air and it'll land and it'll become the Mona Lisa. course, if you throw out the Mona Lisa in the air, it might fall down as a bunch of paint. But the opposite doesn't hold true. Therefore, examining the Vedic science produces faith in the Supreme. It should be. Of course, nowadays, most of the people who are examining the Vedic knowledge are examining it from the point of view of atheistic philosophy, impersonalism, materialistic philosophy. And therefore, their conclusions are the exact opposite of the Vedic conclusions, because they're impersonalists. Like one of my favorite Ayurvedic teachers, he's a really good Ayurvedic doctor, except that he's an impersonalist, although he worships the deity, Krishna. So ultimately, the state of being in this world nowadays is that even people brought up in so-called Veda culture are also impersonalists. And therefore he misses out on the most essential parts of knowledge. Still, the Vedic literature, if you read something like Charak Samhita or Bhrigu Samhita, they start out having a prayer to Vishnu, or at least to the Supreme, asking for mercy so that what they say may become valid. And indeed, if we study philosophy of the Veda culture, it's all meant for the same philosophy that's in the Bhagavad Gita. And if it's studied from the impersonalistic, materialistic point of view, then you look at something like a chart, and you see, oh, it looks like you're heading for a really difficult time of renunciation. It looks like you're going to lose everything. You'll have nothing else to do but turn to God. No, no, what's the remedy for that, against that? People here, they're going to lose everything, become God conscious. They want a remedy. Immediately, they'll do pujas and please don't let that happen. And they find that they're going to become rich and have unlimited sense gratification. They think, wow, it's a really auspicious time in my life. So the opposite, the Veda culture teaches the opposite, at least for those who are serious about spiritual life. The Vedic literature, including the sciences, are all meant for cultivating God consciousness. At least to see Krishna within everything. And therefore when we hear about the opulence of the Absolute, we should understand that we may not be very opulent, but the whole idea is that we should appreciate how opulence is actually coming from Krishna, so that when we become Krishna conscious, we can appreciate Krishna. Or if we appreciate Krishna's opulence, then we'll become conscious of Krishna. Because the whole material world is based upon envy. Anyone who's a little bit more opulent than we are, we're envious of them. If I get 2 samosas and someone else gets 3, I start cursing the person. May that devotee choke on the extra samosa. Unless he shares it with me. Therefore, at the beginning of this middle 6 chapters, Krishna says, Idam tu te guyatamam pravaksham anushuyave, because you're never envious of me. Therefore, I'll disclose to you the most confidential knowledge, both theoretical and realized, by knowing which you'll become free from all the miseries of material existence. So what makes us miserable, the greatest offense is envy. All enviousness is ultimately directed towards Krishna. We see someone has more than we do, and we become envious of them. And sometimes people even see someone has less than they do, and they become envious of them. Prabhupada gives the example of C.R. Das. C.R. Das was a lawyer in India during the Gandhi times. And C.R. Das was fabulously wealthy. At that time, the rupee was worth more than, well, because not anything's worth more than the American dollar nowadays, but it was like one Prabhupada said, rupees are made out of pice. And if you had 10 pice, you can get enough vegetables to feed your family for a week. And he was making 50,000 rupees a month. He was considered to be fabulously wealthy. But he was sitting on his porch one day, and he was looking at a mendicant on the street, and his wife came up to him and said, C.R. Das, you're fabulously wealthy. You have everything you ever anyone would ever want. Why are you always morose? He said, what do you want? And then he pointed out the mendicant. He said, I want to become like him. Dum-da-dum-dum. Be careful what you wish. So later on, Gandhi told all his followers, of which C.R. Das was one of them, they had to give up all their jobs in the English court. He couldn't be a lawyer anymore. He had to surrender and become renounced and simply join Gandhi's movement and work as for Gandhi. So Gandhi, he gave up his job, and Gandhi gave him something like, 500 rupees a month to live on instead of 50,000. So within a short time, a few months, he died. He couldn't tolerate it. The renunciation was too much for him. He wasn't prepared for it. So similarly, the modern civilization is such that people's values are upside down. If they think they're going to become a lover of God, they become nervous. I'm going to lose everything and I'm going to love God. He'll take everything away from me and I'll love God. Better I pray to God if he's there to give me everything, and then I won't need him anymore. Give me a house. Give me a wife. Give me a color TV. Om Jai Jagadisha Hari. You know that song? But if we realize how great Krishna is, and as it says in Bhagavad Gita, if we accept how great Krishna is and not become envious of him and deny his existence, try to become like him or better than him, appreciate how great he is, then we can actually become Krishna conscious. Then we can actually surrender to him. Otherwise, it's not possible. If we don't know how great Krishna is, then we'll be nervous. So if I surrendered him, what's going to happen to me? But, as it says in the prayers of the six Goswamis, Tyatva Tornam Ashesha Mandalapati Shrenim Sadatu Chavan Bhutvadina Gunesha Ko Karunaya Kopi Nakanta Shito Kopi Bhava Rasamrita Dilahari Kalala Mogna Moho Bande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopala Go. So the six Goswamis, they were fabulously wealthy, but they gave it all up and became mendicants, begging from door to door. But they were so much enriched with the gopis' feelings of separation that they enjoyed transcendental pleasure at every moment. Similarly, when Lord Chaitanya was at Jagannath Puri, he was in the role of Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, those who are in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Gaudiya Madhva Sampradaya, should always feel the separation of Krishna, worship his transcendental form, discuss his transcendental teachings, his entourage. The spiritual masters should enrich the devotees to the highest devotional perfection, feeling constant separation from Krishna while engaged in devotional service is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. So that's what this 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is meant to help us appreciate how great Krishna is, so we become interested in surrendering to him and becoming his devotee. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Khala. Spasiba. Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, thank you for your lecture. What practice or spiritual practice of Mayavadi? So, impersonalist, we know this is Buddhism, Brahman, and another. How we see Mayavadi in this world?
Mayavadi. You're interested in practicing Mayavadi philosophy?
Yes.
You're interested in practicing Mayavadi philosophy?
Just see, understand that. Understand, this is Mayavadi. So this is Buddhism.
Well, we can examine the life of Prakasananda Saraswati. What they do is they live very austerely. They sleep on the floor. They eat very simply. They study Vedanta Sutra or the commentary Sharirak Bhasya all day. They have a very, very regulated life. They only associate with other Mayavadis. And they only hear the Sharirak Bhasya, the commentaries. And they engage in meditation on Brahman. Sounds interesting? They only eat a thimbleful of rice every day. They eat very little and very austerely. They sleep very little. They just think about Brahman. Oh, Brahman, I love you. How I love you, how I love you, my dear Brahman. Yes.
And second question about teacher of Ayurveda. How he was impersonalist, but
He wasn't impersonalist. Huh? The teacher of Ayurveda.
Yes.
Is Charak. It's called the Charak Samhita or the Shushu, and he's compiled from the previous. And his disciple's succession, as in Charak Samhita, comes from Dhanvantari through the four Kumaras. Through the Ashvini Kumaras. So the original source of Ayurveda is Dhanvantari. Dhanvantari is not an impersonalist, he's God.
Yes, but you said about Vasantlat or another teacher who...
I didn't say about any particular teacher.
Yes, your name don't say.
I did not. I didn't name anyone.
Yes, but I'm asking how is possible that teacher worship the deity of Krishna and...
Well, many people worship the deity of Krishna and they're impersonalists. Even Shankaracharya recommends that. You worship the deity and after you're liberated, then you become the deity. That's quite common. I met one lady at a Sunday feast, and she was glorifying Krishna the whole time when I was talking to her. And then finally she said, Krishna is so wonderful, I have him on my altar, and one day I'll become Krishna. So that's generally the way people think. A lot of people think like that. We're not supposed to think like that, though. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. There are two questions from Avadhutarai Prabhu. First one is it possible by the philosophy of intelligent design to come to personalistic understanding of God? It is a kind of Aroha Panta.
Yeah, of course you can become... I mean, an intelligent person will come to that conclusion. I'm sure most of the people who adhere to that philosophy or that science of intelligent design or personalist, it's just that they probably lose their job if they say anything about God. So they keep it rather, they just leave it up to the other intelligent people to figure out what the punchline is.
And there is another question. Is it really possible on the level of sadhana to have some tiny feeling of separation from Vrindavan, Krishna, etc.?
Some kind of separation, some kind. Just like we feel separation from prasadam sometimes. It's a kind of separation. You may feel separation from, you know, this one of the sweet shops in Lloyd Bazaar. So that's kind of a separation. It's connected with Vrindavan. There's some feeling of separation. No, separation is normal, isn't it? Just like if we remember how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his associates like Prabhupada or Acharyas were feeling separation, then we can also feel something. They'll allow us to feel something about how they're feeling their separation. By good association, we can also get some feelings of separation. Because that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he distributed that feeling of separation from Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan from their associates. And by his association, we can feel the same as feelings of separation. Just by serving his mission, then if he's pleased, then he'll give us those feelings of separation. By giving us his association, the association of his devotees. We're feeling that separation. Okay. Khwala, spasiba, grantarai, shimad bhagavad gita, kijai.